South Africa's claim before the International Court of Justice is all that was achieved from the entire population, considering even those who did not vote for this administration, those who took to the streets to protest against Netanyahu. That really catches my attention. They hid themselves under the cloak of what that assures them of collective suicide with what they consider the enemy.
After the first Zionist Congress in 1897, there was talk of Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates. In 1948, they accepted, of course, the partition of Palestine, but declared that it was a first step. Then in 1967, in the misnamed Six-Day War, they occupied the entire Palestinian territory and some areas of the Syrian Golan Heights and Lebanon, in where the Zionist project is going.
¿Dónde para el proyecto sionista?
Let's see, the Zionist project. It goes back a little bit to history, because from the first Zionist Congress to the ones that followed, there was a lot of discussion there. And there were voices that did not agree at all with this form of foreign colonialism in the region and typically European version, nor with the fact of considering the original inhabitants of the land as enemies. I mean, in 2006, I translated Martin Buber's political text, and there was a whole movement, a movement that was against it. Let's see, in 1946, when the Anglo-American Commission went to Palestine to see if the land was actually divided or not, which was carried out on November the 29th, 1947, they disobeyed the leadership of the Jewish population of Palestine. Martin Buber, Yehuda Magnus, and Moshe Slimansky. They all arrived and convinced the Anglo-American Commission that the land should not be divided, that there should be neither one nor two national states, but a confederation of autonomous communities from the part of Greater Syria. So within the Zionist movements, there were also these positions which were all the time denouncing the demographic and expansionist ideas as deeply contradictory with the love of the land, with the possibilities of coexistence that existed. However, well, we see now that not a bit of that remains. That was present until 1948, and all the years that Martin Buber was still alive, Martin Buber continued fighting to protect, to protest the properties, the rights of the Palestinian population. Of course, he died in 1965. He no longer saw 1967. He did not see all that expansionist fever, absolutely foreign to the culture of the region. I would also like to point to the time of the secularization of the Hebrew language. Yehuda proposed and practiced this secularization of the language, which was much discussed due to the connotations it later had, which we are seeing now in its worst moment and in its worst version. He said that the words that had to be completed from so many countries, that the Hebrew language had to be confined to the ritual religious sphere, had to be completed from Arabic, which was the closest language, the most sisterly, and the one of the place. But well, the Zionist leadership is doubly Eurocentric. It is Eurocentric in Central Europe, and it used the Jews of Arab countries as human shields to carry out this project, which, as Theodor Herzl, the founder of Zionism, said, had to have its function be the retaining wall that prevents Eastern barbarism from entering Europe. And well, this is what we're seeing now, and it is in its worst phase, of course.
Y está en su peor fase, por supuesto.
Gracias, Silvana.
Thank you, Silvana. Now I'm going to give way to the audience. They have two questions they want to ask you. Please.
Por favor.
Hola, mi nombre es Janigeria.
Hello, my name is Jangeria. I am a philosophy professor, also of Palestinian descent in Chile. I wanted to ask you the following question. I wanted to know what you think about the biblical names that the Israelis use for both the use of weapons and also the military campaigns that they carry out, precisely in a land that we know has that connotation.
Gracias, Hani. Eso es justamente el tema que yo más trabajo.
Thanks. That is precisely the topic that I work on the most. I mean, the abusive ways in which the biblical text and biblical figures are used to name these campaigns weapons. And well, it has a purpose that Netanyahu recently reminded us of when he spoke of Amalek, which is that people who must be exterminated according to God for having abused the weakest at the exit from Egypt. Something that one says now. Well, the one who is playing the role of Amalek is the Netanyahu administration and not the people of Gaza whom he's trying to annihilate. This happens in Rafael Industries. What's happening? From the name Rafael, since it is actually an acronym to each of the names of the campaign. I've detailed this in my book, The Drone Bible, about such abuses and the abuses of biblical figures in Israel's political discourse. I believe that in the Bible, there are two sources. One is monarchical and the other one is prophetic. The prophetic sets limit to the monarchic. Obviously, the one that prevails is the monarchic in a European sovereignist version. And what it seems to me is that the Bible is needed precisely to evoke the limiting forces that the prophetic sources set.
Hola.
Hello, my name is Carmen Mendoza. I am an international journalist, and I would like to know who are the settlers, where do they come from, and what role have they played and are playing in the occupation of Palestine?
Thanks for the question, Carmen. Let's see. The settlers, many of them, are Zionist immigrants, very convinced of this expansionist vision that Daniel described at the beginning. They tend to come from the United States and France and also other places. There are, of course, Israelis born there, of course, but it is striking how there are people who have immigrated to occupy the land, to radically carry out this ethnic cleansing to the point of genocide, and which is also manifested in the siege. There are Israeli organizations that seek to protect the settlers, especially Area C. But the truth is that Area A, similar to Area B and Area C, are constantly besieged by the army. On June the 8th, 50 armored cars poured into Ramallah just to destroy the apartment of someone who was there in jail in Israel in Area A. So this form of presence is what they call showing presence. It makes the settlers feel completely free to commit all kinds of crimes. Even the last administration has greatly encouraged them to be armed with heavy weapons. Even teenagers who go to school armed with heavy weapons. So let's say there is a debasement, a civil debasement at the beginning. Now, deepening of this debasement is enormous, and they are very convinced settlers and young people. I went to the Jordan Valley accompanying a group of Israeli retirees who defend the shepherds so that they can graze. What happened was that two young boys of about 16 years old went down with their cows to destroy the wheat fields with their tiny tractors to scare the sheep. In other words, there is a siege. There is a constant siege, and there are, of course, young people born there, but also very right-wing, as well as convinced Zionists who emigrate to precisely what they call badly, very badly, Judaize the land. This is what we see in the Jerusalem area, the Greater Jerusalem Project, right? But we shouldn't also forget about what's happening in the worst of the lowest in Hebron, which is Al-Khalil.
Muchas gracias, Silvana.
Thank you very much, Silvana, for accepting our invitation. What you say is absolutely true. Here in Chile, there is a Hebrew Institute that in one of its last years makes study trips to the occupied territories, and there they do a course of almost a week called Gatna, where they teach Chilean citizens how to use weapons wearing Israeli army uniform. And that, incredibly, is legal. I thank you very much for your participation, and let's take a break.
Y vamos a una pausa, ya regresamos.
Dear listeners, that was the first part of A Window to Palestine. You can listen to the second part tomorrow.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. So welcome to this episode of Lantern, in which in every program we have a nice story, of course. We learned many things from that shorter story, inshallah. The topic of today's story is Have My Seat. I boarded a flight a few hours ago and an older Pakistani woman wearing hijab boarded but couldn't speak English or find her seat and she had difficulty walking. A Caucasian man in seat 1B of first class stood up and gave her his seat and went all the way back to seat 17A where she was assigned. After landing, I waited for him to deplane and ask why he did that and what he thought of minorities in times like this because she visibly stood out. And he responded, I didn't care about her background. I saw an older woman who looked like she could use a break and it was a short flight anyway, so I didn't mind sitting in the back. I mentioned that it's the norm to be compassionate to one another as human being, but unfortunately it's become a noble gesture in times like this where hate crimes are on the rise and the political climate has taken a dark turn in recent months. He agreed and then said, I didn't want to tell anyone on the plane that I'm a strict white conservative because he had helped someone who was visibly a minority. But if that were my mother, I'd hope someone else would do the same for her. I thank him for his compassionate gesture and we parted away. It does not matter what race you are, what religion you follow, what color your skin is, what language you speak, what culture you practice, what size you are, how young or old you are. If you have a good, kind heart, you will help another human being as much as you can. Let's find opportunities to do good unto others. As Muslims, we should be even more kind than the man in the story. Let's assist our non-Muslim neighbors, friends, and even strangers if we see that they need our help. And don't forget to smile. Allah will reward you well, inshallah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear audience welcome to a new episode of Lantern from IRB English Radio This is Zainab Musavi and what we do in this program is to listen to certain religious stories and then try to talk about the themes and lessons that we can take out of these stories Well, the story we just listened to concerns one of the highly recommended actions in Islam which is doing good to others In addition to their personal responsibilities, the faithful people also feel responsible towards others. This is among the basic teachings of Islam and a manifestation of the religion's presence in social arena. Serving people is among the most valuable deeds before God and in Islam it warrants reward in the hereafter. It is among the strength of Islamic ethics to pay attention to others' needs and help them, serve them and do good to them and cooperate with others. Provided that it meets two conditions, namely purity of intention and sincerity, serving people is considered among acts of worship and God has promised great rewards for those doing it. The Holy Prophet ﷺ has explained the greatest of actions in which the issue of fairness, equality and self-sacrifice and their relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala have been elucidated upon. The Holy Book of Quran narrates the courtesy of the last Prophet ﷺ in the following way. أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ فبما رحمة من الله لنت لهم ولو كنت فظا غليظ القلب لانفضوا من حولك. It is by some mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you, Prophet, are gentle to them. Had you been harsh and hard-hearted, they would have scattered from about you. Surah Al Imran, verse 159. Well, this Quranic verse clarifies that benevolence and kindness of the Holy Prophet wasallam to all was one of the reasons of people's attraction towards him. People are fed up of discourtesies and harsh persons, and certainly such persons are the victims of their own bad nature first. As omission and unwanted errors are part of human nature, the same should be overlooked and retaliation avoided. Well, okay, let's go and have a short recess, and we will be back very soon.
Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Welcome back, dear audience. You are listening to Lantern and we are talking about doing good to others. Well, I should make one point here, and that is, you know, an act of charity is like perfume, and it benefits the user, the seller, and the buyer. You know, the psychological benefits that one receives from helping others are indeed great. If you suffer from depression, an act of charity will have a more potent effect on your sickness than will the best available medicine. Even when you smile upon meeting others, you are giving charity. The Holy Prophet ﷺ said, "Do not dismiss certain acts of kindness by deeming them to be insignificant. Even if such an act is to meet your brother with a smiling face, for that is a deed which might weigh heavily in your scale of deeds." On the other hand, when you frown upon meeting others, you are displaying a sign of enmity. An act that is so detrimental to the brotherhood that only Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows the full extent of its evil effects. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam informed us that the prostitute who once gave a handful of water to a dog was rewarded for that deed with paradise, which is as wide as the heavens and the earth. This is because the giver of rewards is forgiving, rich, and worthy of praise. We must remember that Islam guides us to understand that the way we deal with others is of the utmost importance, because everything we do should be for the sake of Allah. Our lives, including our treatment of others, should be an act of worship. Okay, now, dear listeners, it seems that we have no more time for this episode. Let me say that may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant us the ability to help others in righteous acts by acting upon Islamic teachings. Thank you very much for being with us in this episode of Lantern, and until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
Ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub.
We are with you. What about you? Meaningful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of For a Better Life. Well, once more, this is Asma at your service. And just for the record, just like always, I have to remind you of the very fact that we all are the same. And in here, I just come to share ideas so that we would have a broader horizon. So, in today's episode, we're going to talk about Islamic ethics. Like, manners are very important in our religion. Like the Prophet himself comes to say at the very beginning of his journey, he just expresses this idea that I have been chosen to complete the codes of manners and ethics. With this very idea, we're going to start today's episode just to realize that manners and ethics are just very important in Islam, and there is a huge focus on these manners and the moral codes and the, you know, all the details that must be attributed to mannerism, to ethics, and to every single aspect related to them. So, have you ever thought about this idea that how much mannered you are? I mean, like, don't wig out and don't be so surprised for this question. But honestly, if we ask ourselves how much manners do we have, how many moral codes we have in our life, in the way we treat with others, in the way we treat others, in the way we behave with others, then we're going to learn a lot about ourselves. Like, I mean, these questions are going to tell a lot about who we are and how we are. And then we are going to realize how much we are practicing the religion that we have. What is ethics and manners, generally speaking? Well, according to me, myself, maybe the etiquettes of behaving with other people, the rules that you'd follow to treat other people, the way you express yourself in a public and even in your very private circle, like among your friends, all of these etiquettes and all of these rules are going to tell a lot about how mannered you are and how perfectly behave people around you and how, based on Islamic perspective, you're just expressing yourself in a true manner. So, what are the ethics that Islam encourages? So, before I go into the very details of the manners that we have to go through and Islam focuses on, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. The manner of our Prophet has always been a matter of pride for us as Muslims. The way he treated children, the way he treated every single person who did him wrong, the way he treated the ignorant, the way he treated women, the way he treated every single individual who was a part and a member of society, has always been a matter that us as Muslims have been always so proud about, because like this much of focus and emphasis on mannerism is something that honestly we feel like we are so much proud of. The concept of honesty is very important and at the same time very much challenging. Like, I myself, I'm talking about myself. Maybe I would consider myself as a very honest person, but what other people think about me? And the question is that the reality? Is it the whole truth about me? Like in psychology, we have the idea of different masks, like people have got this ego and superego, and that superego is mostly the mask we wear in public in order to hide our true selves. About honesty, I should say that whenever I just talk about it, I remember the id and ego. Like, if I want to practice honesty with every single person in the world, then life is going to be difficult. This is just to talk turkey. Because if you want to be honest, then many people might not approve of what you're saying. Therefore, I'm just saying that us as Muslims have to practice honesty to the point that we do not hurt other people with our honesty. Because when it comes to honesty, it's not just a single direction that you go through. No, it has got some dimension. It is multidimensional, and we have to take care of other parts as well. Like, you come to practice honesty with other people, but at the same time, you are breaking their hearts. Like, you are demotivating other people. Like, with your honesty, you are going to let people down. Like, there is a youngster comes to an old man, and then the old man tries to be honest, and then with his honesty, unconsciously, of course, he does not know what he's doing. He is not doing this deliberately. Then he would mention some points about life or about reality or about even the personality of that young boy or girl who's addressed him to give him some ideas about life in a way that he would create an obstacle in their lives in a way that they won't even dare to go further. We're responsible for the much of things we share with people. You're responsible. And in the end, you have to have some answers for whatever you have done. But then we have justice. Justice also is another important factor that we must take care of. Like, if you're parents, you have to be just. If you're a teacher, you have to be just. At your workplace, you have to be just. There are a lot of places in society that we can practice justice. And we all know that there are some occasions in our life that we come to make use of our prejudices. Like, our prejudices are going to decide for us instead of our just assessment of the situation.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
Your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need
to be all
so I can
be. And I know that you see how much you need.
Cause
your love is all I need to be all I can be. And I know that you see how much you mean to me. Cause your love is all I need to be all I can be. And I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
How much tolerance we have shared with other people in our circles and communities that we attend in society. We need each other's tolerance, like to rein in our rage. Then modesty. Of course, modesty is one of the very important ethics that we should take into consideration. Like, the more modest you are, the more close to the idea of a real human being you are. We must practice moderation in every single behavior we share and we manifest, we express in society that we're attending. And in the end, we have altruism, which is sort of a being philanthropist. Like, to have this sense of philanthropy towards other people and towards our friends, towards the people whom we do not even know, is something that would help us grow into a better version of ourselves. Like, it would help us be improved into this better person that we wish to be. So that's also very important. And just as I mentioned altruism, I remembered the people of Palestine, like all these Palestinians are suffering from too much of pain. And since in Islam we feel like we are the same body, we are actually different parts of the same body, we have to care for each other and we have to pray at least for each other's betterment. So this was all for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, he knows.
The Limelight.
After a week of debate, U.S. Congress on Friday, 12th of April, reauthorized Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, known as FISA. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. House lawmakers voted on Friday, 12th of April, to reauthorize Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, including a key measure that allows for warrantless surveillance of American citizens. The controversial law allows for far-reaching monitoring of foreign communications, but has also led to the collection of U.S. citizens' messages and phone calls. Lawmakers voted 273 in favor, 147 against, to approve the law, which the Biden administration has for years backed as an important counterterrorism tool. An amendment that would have required authorities seek a warrant failed in a tied 212-212 vote across party lines. Donald Trump opposed the reauthorization of the FISA bill, posting on his Truth Social platform on Wednesday, 10th of April, "Kill FISA. It was illegally used against me and many others. They spied on my campaign." The law, which gives the government expansive powers to view emails, phone calls, and texts, has long been divisive and resulted in charges from civil liberties groups that it violates privacy rights. House Republicans were split in the lead-up to the vote over whether to reauthorize Section 702 of FISA, the most contentious aspect of the bill, with House Speaker Mike Johnson struggling to unify them around a revised version of the pre-existing law. Republicans shut down a procedural vote on Wednesday, 10th of April, that would have allowed Mike Johnson to put the bill to a floor vote, in a further blow to the Speaker's ability to find compromise within the Republican Party. Following the defeat, the bill was changed from a 5-year extension to a 2-year extension of Section 702, an effort to appease far-right Republicans who believe that Donald Trump will be president by the time it expires. Section 702 allows for government agencies such as the National Security Administration, the NSA, to collect data and monitor the communications of foreign citizens outside of U.S. territory without the need for a court warrant, with authorities touting it as a key tool in targeting cybercrime, international drug trafficking, and terrorist plots. Since the collection of foreign data can also gather communications between people abroad and those in the United States, however, the result of Section 702 is that federal law enforcement can also monitor American Citizens Communications. Section 702 of Pfizer has faced opposition before, but it became especially fraught in the past year after court documents revealed that the FBI had improperly used it almost 300,000 times, targeting racial justice protesters, January 6 suspects, and many others. The overreach emboldened resistance to the law, especially among far-right Republicans who view intelligence services like the FBI as their opponent. Donald Trump's all-caps post further weakened House Speaker Mike Johnson's position. Trump's online remarks appeared to refer to an FBI investigation into a former campaign advisor of his, which was unrelated to Section 702. Other far-right Republicans, such as Matt Gaetz, similarly vowed to derail the legislation, putting its passage in peril. The California Democratic representative and former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, also gave a statement in support of passing Section 702 of Pfizer, with its warrantless surveillance abilities intact, urging lawmakers to vote against an amendment that would weaken its reach. Nancy Pelosi said, "I don't have the time right now, but if members want to know, I'll tell you how we could have been saved from 9/11 if we didn't have to have the additional warrants." Debate over Section 702 of Pfizer pitted Republicans, who charged that the law was a tool for spying on American citizens, against others in the Republican Party who sided with intelligence officials and deemed it a necessary measure to stop foreign terrorist groups. One proposed amendment called for requiring authorities to secure a warrant before using Section 702 to view U.S. citizens' communications, an idea that intelligence officials oppose as limiting their ability to act quickly. Another sticking point in the debate was whether law enforcement should be prohibited from buying information on American citizens from data broker firms, which amass and sell personal data on tens of millions of people, including phone numbers and email addresses. Section 702 of Pfizer dates back to the George W. Bush administration, which secretly ran warrantless wiretapping and surveillance programs in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. In 2008, U.S. Congress passed Section 702 as part of the Pfizer Amendments Act and put foreign surveillance under more formal government oversight. Lawmakers have renewed the law twice since, including in 2018, when they rejected an amendment that would have required authorities to get court warrants for U.S. citizens' data. Last year, Attorney General Merrick Garland and Avril Haines, Director of National Intelligence, sent a letter to congressional leaders telling them to reauthorize Section 702 of Pfizer. They claimed that intelligence gained from it resulted in numerous plots against the United States being foiled, and that it was partly responsible for facilitating the drone strike that killed Al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri in 2022. The website Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. Congress spent the past week in a fractious debate over a major government surveillance program that gives U.S. authorities the ability to monitor vast swathes of emails, text messages, and phone calls without a court warrant. In a vote on Friday, 12th of April, lawmakers ultimately decided to keep that warrantless surveillance intact and pass a two-year reauthorization of the law, known as Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA. The law has long been contentious among both progressives and libertarian-leaning conservatives who view it as a violation of privacy rights and civil liberties. Donald Trump has likewise lambasted it out of personal grievance. Its defenders, which include intelligence agencies and Joe Biden's administration, argue that it is an important tool in stopping terrorist attacks, cybercrime, and international drug trade. Section 702 of FISA is a measure added in 2008 to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, first passed in 1978, which allows authorities, including government agencies such as the NSA and the FBI, to collect and monitor communications. More specifically, it gives them the authority to survey the messaging of foreign citizens outside of United States soil and to do so without requesting a court warrant. Although Section 702 was ostensibly intended to be used to monitor foreign terrorist groups and criminal organizations, law enforcement agencies have also used this authority to collect and survey U.S. citizens' communications. This is because Americans messaging with people abroad are also liable to have their data accessed, which has led to improper use of the law and charges from civil liberties groups that it gives authorities a backdoor into warrantless searches.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering the doubts and questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو ذا الرحمن. Allah هو ذا المنان.
لا إله إلا.
Please send us your emails to our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani is the guest speaker for today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, Sheikh Rouhani, for today's discussion, I want to ask you about the concept of zulm or oppression and also cruelty. So, some people might think that those who do oppression, I mean the oppressors and the cruel ones, and those who are, we can say, that's right, act upon atrocity in today's world, they will have a better life. They will be healthier because they can amass wealth. They can violate the rights of this person and that person. And it is so that always oppression and cruelty, has better fruits in the lives of such people. Is it so?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I don't think so, because oppression or zulm is a kind of action that is wrong, that is bad, that is evil. Based on Islamic anthropology, we know that in human being there are different souls. One is Nafs al-Lawwama.
Yes.
Nafs al-Lawwama is like a judge within us or inside us that is always aware of our actions and our deeds. This Nafs is a very just and fair judge.
Yes.
It always judges us, and it always warns us that, oh man, you are doing wrong things, you are doing evil things. Be mindful. It will have its consequences for you. That is why you see that it many times happens that some criminals, mm-hmm. after a while, after some years, they themselves refer to the judge that I was criminal at that time and I deceived you. Due to the deception I made, you mistakenly, for example, punished an innocent person instead of me. Yes. Please free that person, and I am the one who should be punished. If you look at, for example, the newspapers, you'll see lots of cases that happen that criminals, after sometimes many years or many weeks, days, they themselves refer and surrender to the police and to the court and want to be punished. Because of what? Because of this nafs al-lawwama, or consciousness that we have in our own mind, which is called wujdan. So that's why even this zalim, though he has an opportunity to oppress others for short time or long time, but within this zalim, based on this anthropological kind of understanding of the nature of man, he has this wujdan, this kind of judge inside him or herself. That's why finally, at the end of the day, what he receives is a kind of punishment. Even he himself punishes himself. Because of what? Because this nafs, this soul is always there, always with him, always reminding him of all those wrong things that he did. That is why if you look at the history, you will not find any, let's say, oppressor who be happy in the whole life, particularly at the end of their lives.
Okay.
This, if you go to the dictators, to the oppressor, for example, kings, let's say leaders in the history, if you go and study about them, you see that all of them either been punished by their opponents, or even if they were not punished, the end of their life were the most bad and evil life. And it is the thing that we see in the life of all the oppressors. For example, in our time, we saw Saddam Hussein.
Yes.
Saddam Hussein oppressed.
Yes.
Brutally, mercilessly, let's say horribly, we can say the poor people of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw what happened to this dictator at the end of his life, you know?
Okay.
Or Gaddafi, or many other, let's say, oppressors here and there, we've seen. Or the King Reza Khan, for example, in Iran, we can say. Look what happened to them. It tells us this fact that being oppressor, performing oppression on the innocent people, on the poor people, will not have a good result.
Yes.
For the oppressor. This is what we see.
And so many other examples. For example, in the Arab Spring, we could see in so many of the Arab countries, and Muslim countries.
Yes.
For example, Gaddafi was the other one, for example. And so many other dictators as the cruel
Pinochet,
ones.
Pinochet, for example.
Yeah.
And we see all of them in our time. If you go back to the previous
history
centuries,
Islam,
there are lots of examples. Yes.
And before that, in the previous generations, you know, we could see the stories of pharaohs and the kings, you know, of all the times, whether Greek, Roman, Persian, or, for example, that's right, Egyptian ones, you know, all of them somehow were, that's right, they're answered for all their oppressions that they did during their own time. Adolf Hitler, for example, of the contemporary time.
That's only in this life.
Yes.
And they should wait the real punishment in the hereafter life, which is everlasting kind of punishment.
Mm-hmm. That's all right. Okay.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Praises to Allah, all glory is to Allah. We worship Allah and no one but Allah.
But since they are powerful and they have power, the people might have a superficial look at their lifestyle, isn't it? Because, for example, they could amass wealth or they could become rich. And usually the young generation, you know, are easily deceived by such a superficial look at their lives, Shaykh.
You know, apparently it seems that they have very has led superficial life with lots of, for example, facilities, yeah, in
yes.
their life, luxury yes. life, they are enjoying a lot. Let me tell you this story, which is really beautiful, about Alexander the Great.
Mm-hmm.
It is said that Alexander the Great once was victorious. He conquered lots of new, let's say, lands, areas, countries. And he was coming back to Greece from these lots of conquerors and victories that he had. And he was very much happy. Then he reached a place where a hakim and a wise man was living by the name Diogenes or Diogen.
Okay. Yes.
And then when he approached the cave in which the Diogen or Diogenes was living,
mm-hmm.
he told all the army members, commanders, let's say the officials, that today I want to gift this Diogenes whatever he wants from me.
Mm-hmm.
Because today I want to do a very great kind of job in the history to be recorded that Alexander the Great did such a thing with this hakim.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he approached the cave and asked hakim that, okay, Diogenes, today I'm very much happy, I'm very much proud of myself because I have lots of victories. And I have lots of golds, lots of servants, lots of new lands, areas. I'm really happy, and I want to today to do a favor for you.
Mm-hmm.
Please ask me. Whatever you ask me today, I will provide you with that.
Okay.
For example, if you want to rule over new, let's say, countries, nations, I will appoint you as a king of those areas. If you want, for example, gold, silvers, mm-hmm. money,
yes.
if you need, for example, beautiful girls, servants, mm-hmm. whatever, I'm ready to provide you with whatever you ask me.
Okay.
Then it is said it's very nice. Then the Diogenes came out of from his cave. No, Diogenes was sitting before this cave, in front of the cave. And then Diogenes raised his hand and looked at Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was on his horse. Mm-hmm. He was riding a horse.
Okay.
He looked at him and said, really, if I ask whatever you will be provided me with, he said, yes, of course, I promise. I told all my members, my soldiers, my army, my commanders that I will do that. I will do that, absolutely. The only thing that this Diogenes asked from Alexander the Great was this, that please move a little because I am taking the bath with the sun's rays. And please just move a little
sunshine,
away.
Huh?
Yeah, move a little away, let the sun shine.
Uh-huh.
Then Alexander the Great was shocked. Said that this is the only thing that you really want from me.
Okay.
Diogenes said, yes, this is the only thing that I want from you. Then the interpreters of this event interpreted this very beautifully. It says that Diogenes wanted to tell Alexander the Great that you are like obstacle
mm-hmm.
between the man, between the servants of God
mm-hmm.
and God.
Okay.
You are not the one that
you are a barrier.
You are a barrier, exactly.
That's right. Okay.
You should not be proud of yourself. You know, you should let the people to live freely.
Mm-hmm.
You have not the right to, for example, conquer their lands and usurp all their properties and then donate it to me.
Mm-hmm.
It is the wrong thing that you're doing. Then it is said about Alexander the Great that he was really shocked and a kind of revolution mm-hmm. started in his own mind.
That's right.
That look, this man is living such a happy, prosperous, and calm life, but I am always worried, concerned about all the wrong things that I'm doing on the people, on the, let's say, the
That's
poor
right.
people. It is said that after that, Alexander the Great was always trying to achieve that comfortability,
mm-hmm.
that peace, that Diogenes, the Hakim, the wise man, was enjoying. He was always telling that this kind of lifestyle in which there is kind of peace, kind of comfortability, prosperity, tranquility. I'm always seeking this thing, but I cannot find.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a zalim, an oppressor or oppressive person will never enjoy a real happy life. a real, let's say, prosperous life.
Yes.
He will never achieve any kind of true tranquility or comfortability in his life.
That's right.
Apparently, it seems that their life was, let's say, beautiful life, enjoyable life, luxury life with lots of pleasures. But in reality, if you go deep within that life, you find no room for any kind of pleasure or happiness in their lives.
That's all right. And for sure, as we said, these dictators might have a good life for the people, superficially speaking, but inside, they might experience so many traumas, you know, in their life. That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fi al-jannati nahran min Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. Li Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
The U.S. Supreme Court agreed recently to take up the unprecedented claim that Donald Trump has absolute immunity from prosecution in the criminal case over his efforts to overturn the 2020 election results, throwing into jeopardy whether it goes to trial before the 2024 presidential election. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The special counsel pursuing federal criminal charges against Donald Trump for his efforts to overturn his 2020 election loss, filed a U.S. Supreme Court brief on Monday, 8th of April, urging the justices to reject the former president's bid for immunity from prosecution on the principle that no person is above the law. The case is due to be argued before the justices in the coming days. Donald Trump has appealed a lower court's rejection of his request to be shielded from the criminal case brought by special counsel Jack Smith, because he was serving as president